Accession number 16485, reel 2.
Dr. Schulz, reel 2.
So, I was very grateful that somebody was going to help me that way, because I definitely didn't want to risk crossing this river anymore.
We've missed one thing out, and that is he said that he'd hired a boat and that you would go with him.
Yes, that's what. Is it all right now and carry on, or do I have to repeat something?
No, that's all right. Carry on.
Okay, so during the night, we were led again to the edge of the river. The boat was hidden somewhere, you see, where I don't know, but was produced, not very big boat, but it took the chap who was
rowing
with this chap, with the officer to whom I helped, myself and three friends of his. Whether they were the ones that I knew, I don't know. Remember that I wasn't introduced to them and so on, you know. The only contact I knew was the chap who said that I helped him with this civilian clothing. Anyhow, once we crossed the river, we parted in different directions. And I started going in the direction of the farm that I knew that I most probably my friends are there. So I went there. It was most probably about 11 or 12 o'clock at night in winter. In the directions I knew, mind you, just going all quiet and so on. Suddenly, all of a sudden, I hear, and it's a reflector kind of going, a car most probably going towards me, you see, on the road. So I thought, well, I am now on the German side, you see, so it's better to hide somewhere. So from the road, I just went on the side. You see, there was a kind of a dip, you see, as they are on both sides of the road. And like very quietly. And car was coming very, very near, near, near. I hear them and it stopped the blasty thing almost above me. I, oh my God, I don't know. Here I am. Two Germans came out of the car, talking German in each other. And about two or three yards from me, started passing water in the almost over my head. You know, that was really fantastic. I was lying, of course, without any movement or anything, as quiet as a pussycat. And here they blasted peddling over me, you see, speaking something in German, and they finished and they went into the car and went away. Oh, lovely. So I marched very nicely, found the village where this girl had the farm, and asked the first place where is such and such person living. Oh yes, they told me, there's the third one there. Went there and my friends were already there. They crossed the river before. They were waiting. First of all, they were a bit cold, and secondly, they wanted to have some rest and little food and so on. Remember that we were going without any special food or anything like that. So the father of the girl and mother and so on are very kind. They fed us and looked after us and so on, equipped us for the journey to Lodz. We took a train. Now, everything was different. Everything was as if we were in different country altogether. Germans didn't bother us at all. We could take the train, we could travel without any special difficulties and so on. But on the place called Ząbkowice, which is on our way to Krakow, I think it was, because we couldn't go straight to Lodz like that. We had to go by different different roads and different connections, different rail connections. In Zobkowice we had to get out and wait for the trains going in the direction of Lodz. And that's when here, when I first met the German way of dealing with people. They were trying to keep an order or something and telling the people to go behind a certain line. You see, remember, the crowds were trying to get on these trains, enormous crowds, and the trains were full up, you see, and these Germans were very nasty and trying to... I was pushed, you know, from somebody at the back, and quite a lot of people, you see, with my friends, and the Germans started beating me, you see, you see. The first time I got a little wallop there from this German. And the funny thing is, while I remember it, because Ząbkowice in Polish means teeth, something, you know, Ząb, it means a tooth, and you see, they hit me in the tooth. In fact, I spat one or two, I remember. I got a good wallop. Anyhow, after that, slowly we arrived to a place called Koluszki. Now, that's another place where the trains have to be, you know, going in that's a kind of crossover between, you know, how do they call the places? I don't know when the trains have to crossover from lines and also
junction,
yes, very important junction in Poland called Koluszki. Now, it's not very, very far from Lodz, and there was no connection between Lodz and so on, so we decided to walk. And we walked, and slowly, slowly, at last we arrived in Lodz. When we arrived in Lodz, we divided. My friends went to their family, and I went to my family. When I went upstairs, second floor, rang the bell. It was about 9 o'clock in the morning. My mother opened the door. She just looked at me like that and started crying and so on, and ran to my father and told him, look who is coming. Zdzisław is home. Oh, my father was very moved. He was still in bed. You see, what they did, they gave up their hope of living altogether. And they thought, well, somebody told them that they met me and I was very badly hurt, and most probably by now I'll be dead. As a result, they lost the hope of seeing me and my brother. There was still no news about my brother. So now the new hope went to my parents, you see. And they started organizing the things, you see. In the place of my father's printing works, my father organized a little shop with materials, cheap materials, all sorts of things. You see, Lodz being a place where they produce these things, my father, knowing quite a lot of people, he could get hold of these materials and so on and so on. And that was going on from, on 11th of November, I remember, I was surrounded by Germans and taken to a Polish marketplace where I had to witness. It wasn't 11, that was before 11, about 10th, I think, of November. And I witnessed an execution of three people. They hung them. I didn't know why, but we had to watch it, you see. Now, later on, somebody told me Germans did that in order to frighten Poles. Because, you see, on 11th of November, we have a... you see, 11th of November is in Poland... the day of it's all over, you know. First World War was finished on 11th of November at 11 o'clock, isn't it? You know?
Armistice Day.
And Germans were afraid that Poles may organize some kind of uprising or something like that. And so they give the arms to Volksdeutsch. Volksdeutsch, you know what I mean? The Germans who are living in Poland and eating Polish bread and saying that they are Poles, and yes, when the Germans came, they declared that they were Germans. So they were given arms, and so in case Poles will uprise, you see? So they hung these people there, and you see, different people started telling us that their sons were caught by Germans on the street and sent away somewhere. They don't know where, you know. They were catching the people and young people, sending them to Germany and so on and so on. The situation was now very, very nasty. So my father got in touch with one of the clients who used to print something in the printing works of my father, who before the war was in Polish Air Force, expert in aerial photography. He had an only son, one or two years younger than I was, and he decided to run away from Poland. And he asked my father, does he want, by any chance, if I join his son and him, to give him all the necessary money or any diamonds or rings or anything like that, and he will try to go to France. Well, my father came to me and said, what do you think about it? Would you like to join them? It's a great risk. I said, well, you see, there's a risk here, risk there. I think I'll risk it. All right, my father said. So my mother and father, they give him rings, they give him all sorts of bits and pieces, you see. I have still a silver cigarette case that he gave us, you know, to sell. Because money was nothing at that time. Zloty disappeared from, you know, was worth nothing. That was Polish monetary unit. It was worth nothing. And that was just before Christmas 1939. And I joined the chap and his son. Now, slowly, he knew the different points. Being in Polish Air Force before, he knew some kind of secret road to get out of Poland. First of all, we came to Warsaw. In Warsaw, he managed to get a camera from one of our actors in Poland and photographed quite a lot of destroyed places in Warsaw, you see, as evidence how Germany behaved in Poland, you see. That was taken on the film, and we supposed to take this film to Paris, to Polish unit somewhere there. All right, now from there we went to Krakow, already by train and everything nicely. From Krakow, now I don't remember, I think it was Bielsko or something, there's some place called. There, from there, already we are staying in a little place belonging to a non-commissioned Polish officer and his wife, and they were giving us hospitality before he got contact with the next place on the route that we had to go. And there I met, or we met rather, with German young pilots who got also hospitality from this chap. I mean, they were ordered to come to his flat and stay there. So I talked to them, very nice boys, very nice young people, a bit older than I was, and they were complaining that their luggage, you see, got messed somewhere, and here they are, Manchurians that have not have it, you don't even have the handkerchiefs and so on. Oh, I thought, oh well, that's all right, so I can give him a handkerchief. Very nice chaps. But you see, that's they said to me then, you see, Poland kaput. Oh, do you know German a bit?
Just
German
a bit.
Language? Yes, a bit. Goethe, the German poet, who was very famous, of course, and so on, and written quite a lot of different famous things and poetry and so on, was writing about Poles and their history and so on, and one of his poems was called Exact Translation of Polish Words at the Beginning of Polish National Anthem. Polish National Anthem, as you know, starts from Not Yet Poland Is Defeated, because it lives in our hearts, you see. Now, in German it is Noch nicht Polen ist verloren, you see. So when he told me that Poland is kaput, I said, Noch nicht Polen ist verloren. And he said, oh, he knew, of course, the Goethe, so. Yeah. Anyhow, we had a slightly unpleasant happening there, because these Germans, of course, for the daytime they went away and so on. Suddenly some kind of commotion in the corridor, and my friend, you know, the father of my friend, took his pistol and thought, oh well, you know, don't worry, if the Germans will try to arrest us or something, I'll shoot them, and we'll go to the back alley and disappear into the woods. Oh, I thought that's a terrible thing. And then I realized that the Germans who came were just to find out whether there's any more places for the German pilots, you see. Already there were two, you see. So I stood between him and so on, and they told him, never mind, it's all right. And they noticed that there were so many people in there, so they didn't bother and went away. Anyhow, by that time we got the contact for to where to go to the next place, and slowly, slowly we started going towards the frontier between Poland and Slovakia. You see? Now, we next step, I don't remember where it was. It was in school, run by a Polish young lady teacher. And she told us that she can find us a taxi that would take us to the frontier of Slovakia. And there, once we cross the frontier, well, we are already in Slovakia. And remember that Slovakia at the time was pro-German. So from Slovakia we could go to Hungary, and from Hungary in Budapest was already Polish unit. So through the frontier we were brought and told how to cross it. It was in the winter, you see, it snows like that. Bloody hell. Excuse me, Lachtin. Anyhow, we crossed what we thought we crossed the frontier, and my friend, this father, you see, went to some place where there was a light on in the window, looked at there, and there was the portrait of Hitler. Oh, he said, my goodness me, we are in the wrong place, you see. So we had to find our way in different direction, because we heard the train somewhere, you know, on the coming, the sound of the train. So we thought, if we follow the train, we'll find out whether we'll be in the right direction. That was a terrible thing, you see, in the night. Anyhow, we managed to cross the frontier And when we appeared in Hungary, we took a friend from the place called Košice, which was, although it was a Slavonic, a Slovakian place, but it was attached to Hungary. And from there, we went to Budapest. In Budapest, we went straight to Polish consulate, and Polish consulate told my friend that the best thing for him is to send his son to the Polish school, which is in Balaton-Zemerdi, called a place in Hungary. And as far as I am concerned and him, we will be given the tickets and sent through Yugoslavia, through Italy, to France. So we agreed to that. And we were given all the help from Polish consulate, and a group of us was organized, you see, and we went through Yugoslavia. I remember passing through Yugoslavia in the train, and mind you, remember that was already in 1940, beginning of 1940, and I remember going to Yugoslavia, passing Ljubljana, and seeing on the station the happy young people with skis, you know, and so on. I thought, my goodness, here the people live normal life, and me in Poland is arrested and sent to Germany, and all this trouble going there. And passed through there, we went to Trieste, which was already in Italy, and through the northern Italy we went to Modena. That was first place on the side of French side, Modena. In Modena we were told that a special train will be sent with the first class wagon for us and taken us to Paris, where we can volunteer to Polish army. We were already kind of thinking that we are going to join Polish army. And so it was, yes, the train arrived, mind you, we were taken in, beautifully equipped, very comfortably, were transported to France. I remember first, that was already in first Easter holidays, and my friend being having something to do with the Air Force, you see, he got in touch with somebody, and we are told to go to the airport called Le Touquet, and there we had our Easter feast, so to speak, you know. I have even photograph of this place, and very, very, very kind of memorable place, already Easter spending in France. Now, we're near Paris, so we got in touch with the Polish authorities there, and the Polish army was being organized in Paris. In the part of Paris called Saint-Ouen. We went there. It was terrible, this organization, everything, you see. And people said, what the hell do you want to joined the army. We have thousands of the volunteers of French, Poles, you see, who have settled in France before, and all sorts of things and so on. It will be very difficult for you to get in. Oh, my friend said, well, that's a terrible thing. We have to somehow start thinking about what to do. I thought, well, the best thing for me would be to get in touch with Polish students and try to go to Sorbonne. So I was told that the first thing what I have to do is to go to an institution called Polish Library, which is very near Notre Dame, and there they will verify my students' degrees and so on, and then maybe I'll be able to follow my studies at Sorbonne University. I thought, well, my goodness, that's all very well, but you see, I'm supposed to go to the army rather, and so on. They said, look, if you have in Poland not fit for army, you still have your hernia, so what's the use of pushing yourself into the army? Go rather and study the medicine you started. So I took all my papers there, were verified, and I was told, all right, well, that's not so bad, but you see, to take you now to the university, it would be a bit tricky. First of all, you have to learn more French. Secondly, it is the kind of ending of the university year. You may start when it starts again next June or July or something like that. And that was on the spring. So I found myself in a bit of a quandary what to do. And wandering through Paris, believe it or not, I came across American director of Polish YMCA. His name was Paul Super. And I knew him from Poland because he was Polish, he was director of Polish YMCA, you see, from America. Stationed he came to Poland to organize this YMCA in Poland. He came for a month, and believe it or not, after a month he decided to stay in Poland forever, and he did. And he started speaking Polish and, you know, became a very great Polish patriot, really. And when he met me, he said, listen, I am organizing a unit of YMCA for the Polish forces in near Marseille. There will be, I already have a manager of Polish YMCA from Kraków, manager from Poznań, and I need at least another chap, you see. Would you like to join it? I said, well, very much so. What are the conditions? The conditions were fantastic. We are going to be treated as officers. We are going to be equipped in French officers' uniforms, paid as a French officers, stationed in an officer's casino, and you know, treated very, very well, you know, paid well, and so on, so on, and stationed not very far from Marseille. It was like a blessing from the sky, you know, suddenly, you know, to find myself like that. I'll show you, because, yeah, funny enough, I have a photograph.